Okay, I think we'll get started.
Any questions so far? Welcome to the class. My name is Dave Jaffe, and I'm your host and master of ceremonies for the class.
So welcome.
As you notice, there are both students and people from the community in the class, so I hope that isn't a problem. And I prefer that you call me Dave.
Because?
I'm not a professor. I'm a professor in the same way that Professor Erwin Corey is a professor.
And I'm not a doctor.
I'm not a doctor in the same sense that Doctor Who isn't a
doctor. And I don't mean the recent Doctor Who. I mean the old Doctor Who
with the big
with the big scarf.
And if somebody says Mr. Jaffe, I think they're trying to get in touch with my father, who's
not around anymore. So
please,
just call me Dave. So today we're going to be talking a little bit about the course and a little bit about assistive technology, and we're going to also be talking a little bit about student projects. And so that's the agenda for today. First of all, I'd like to introduce Professor Drew Nelson. And if you ever need to talk to a senior faculty person, Professor Nelson is the guy.
Senior.
And if you prefer to have an intra-generational discussion, then Susan Norse is helping out with the class this year. And so she took the class last year, so she can help out on that, in that regard as well.
And on first do some administrative stuff. The first thing is sign-up sheets. These are just a little bit to let me know, you know, where you came from and what your plans are with the class as far as working on projects, and if you're a sophomore or junior. I actually pretty much know that information. So this handout is just for students.
Now, there may be some people that come in a little bit late, and I
understand that, and there may be some people who have to leave early, and that's okay as well. So so please feel free to do that. The next thing I'm going to pass around is this enrolled student attendance list, and this is very important because
students have to attend. Students who are working on projects have to attend all the lectures. Students who are just taking it for lecture only have to attend 10 lectures, including this one. So if you miss a lecture, the lectures are recorded and all the handout materials are going to be on the website. So if you miss a lecture, you're required to review that lecture online and write a short summary of the lecture and your thoughts about the lecture. And I'll be keeping track of which lectures you go to, so don't worry too much about that. So it's important for you to sign up with that, you know, every time.
That's for the students. Now, for community members, I have another sign-up list. And this is for folks who are not students and who have who don't get my announcement by email. So if it's somebody I don't know and you'd like to get announcements about the class, please sign up for that, and you'll get the announcements about the next class. Okay. So
I'm going to be asking a lot of questions, and I want to encourage thinking
and discussion. And we'll come back to this. Who are these people, and why
are they smiling? We'll get back
to that later.
Just keep that in mind. So first thing I want to talk about is how the class got started. And there's been a history of assistive technology projects in ME113, which is the senior capstone project in mechanical engineering. And actually, when I was working at the VA, we had VA involvement in these projects as well.
And it turned out that although the projects were good, it took the students a long time to get engaged with, you know, what is assistive technology, and to talk to people with disabilities in order to do a good job on the project. So it was decided about
4 years ago that what if we had a course that was a prelude to ME 113 so that students who wanted to do work on assistive technology projects could get a one-quarter head start on the background to assistive technology and get a start on their projects. And that's how it came about. And so it was 4 years ago that we started this course. So this is the fourth season of the course.
So what we want to do in the course is disseminate knowledge about assistive technology
through lectures. And I'm not going to be doing all the lectures. I'm just going to be doing this one, and I'm going to have other people come in who are experts in particular areas of assistive technology and disability and just talk about their particular perspective. Perspective is a big part of the course because it's such a big field and there's so many people working on it, it's good to have many different people talk about it.
But all we're going to be focusing on issues of design, engineering design, and students who are working on projects will be developing a prototype device, working with a person with a disability or somebody who, like a clinician who works with people with disabilities. And at the end of the 10 weeks, we'll have a prototype to show off and to test and to present to the class.
So we're really interested in going through this design process that includes people with disabilities, and that's sort of the core engineering design concept that we're looking at.
And we also opened it up to people from the Stanford community because
these lectures are interesting to everybody, and I think it's a service to open it up to people.
The announcements are made on Stanford events and other places.
So in talking about the course, I think it's good to talk about what the course isn't. And it's not about starting a company.
We're not talking about any entrepreneurial type activity. We're not talking about commercializing a product, a device. We're not talking about how to manufacture things for production. It has nothing to do with business. There are other courses that do that very well. The projects are not with big companies. And the companies are not in other countries. We're typically working with people in the local community. So I hope you find that rewarding. And by now, a lot of the students should have mastered taking exams and quizzes. So we're not going to have any exams or quizzes. No, there's no books to buy, no required reading, no problem sets. And all the lectures will be interesting.
And one more thing, there's no equations. So I'm going to
you can pinch yourself. You're awake and so this is going to be a little bit different kind of class. And of course, Jerry Seinfeld would say not that there's anything wrong with these kinds of other kinds of classes, but we're going to be focusing on other things. We're going to be focusing on the engineering process, which includes need finding, brainstorming, prototyping, testing,
communicating. Communicating includes both discussion in class and writing good reports.
And I like to relate a story about myself. I
decided I was going to be an engineer. And I said, well, as an engineer, I don't have to worry about things like public speaking or writing or things like that.
But it became evident
pretty quickly that those were actually the most important things. So I want to focus on those things. So I'm going to encourage people to analyze what's being said, what I say, to engage in discussion,
and ask questions, and
really think about what you're doing. We're going to be focusing on teamwork. So the students who are working on projects will be in teams, and the team will actually include a person with a disability. So that's going to be a part of
the design process. And we're working in the local community.
So the course is two lectures a week. And we're going to have all sorts of people giving the lectures, including researchers and clinicians, people with disabilities, people with therapists and
We're also going to have two facility tours. So that's it's going to be a,
if this were a TV show, it would be a variety show.
So, and people who are students who are working on projects will engage in this design experience. And I've heard universally from students who've worked on these kinds of projects that it's very rewarding and the experience is awesome. So I want to have as many students as possible get that experience. So as a student, you should expect to gain an appreciation of all the challenges in developing assistive technologies, and you'll learn about that. You'll learn about the engineering concepts and need finding and brainstorming and other things. For people working on projects, you're going to be working developing prototypes, testing, and iterative design, and you'd be also communicating your results in the form of a midterm presentation and a final presentation. And the final presentation will be attended by not only your you know, peer students, but people from the community, and you'll be judging each other, and people from the community will be judging your work as well. So you can think of it as a prelude to a professional type of presentation, because you know eventually you're not going to be students anymore. You're going to be professionals. So I want to sort of emphasize that transition in the class here, that what you say and what you write should be professional, because I mean that's what you're striving for, right? So the engineering skills that you're going to be using are ones that you've probably developed, you know, through all your coursework and stuff like that. But this may be your first time that you actually apply it to see if you can actually do this kind of thing and help people with disabilities. So, you know, your work so far has been sort of, you know, introspective. You've been doing stuff, you know, for yourself, problem sets and exams and stuff like this. But with projects like this, you're really putting yourself out there, and it's a whole different kind of challenge. But this is what to expect in the real world. The projects, we'll get to those. They need not be impressive because you're only going to have about 10 weeks to work on them. So students always do a really good job on them, so I'm sure you guys will be the same. And the projects aren't all high-tech. There are some that are purely mechanical and low-tech, if you're talking about, you know, computers and stuff like that being high-tech. So the important thing is in these projects is going through the process, and I'm going to be, you know, watching for that, and you're going to be reporting your progress in doing that. And, you know, getting something to work that you can show off to people is really going to be important, not only for your grade, but for yourself too, because if you feel that if you can see that what you're doing is helping somebody else, it's going to be a tremendous experience for you. I mean, that's just what you became an engineer for, right? So the credit options, as you probably know, there's a couple ways of taking this class. As I mentioned, for one credit, you attend 10 lectures and do no more than, you know, sign in and engage in discussions. There's no letter grade. So if you're if you need a letter grade in this course, the one unit option is not the way to go. For three unit option, you work on the project, and you have a choice between a letter grade or a credit, no credit. And within the three unit options, there's a couple sub options. You can work on a project in this quarter, and then carry your project over to next quarter. So if you're already thinking about taking ME 113, and you're going to have basically a one quarter head start. So if you're going to be taking ME 113 next year, you've made a real smart move, because it's going to be your project is going to be awesome if you have two quarters to work on it. But another option is to if you can't take ME 113 next year, because if you're not an undergrad or not in mechanical engineering, you can still work on your project as independent study. And we've had students do this in the past. So you can work with your team, continue to work with your team, even though you're not a senior.
and you're not taking NB 113, but you can get credit for your efforts in the spring quarter.
Another option is that
that you just work on the course this quarter. And there's another option that isn't on here that was done last quarter. There are some assistive technology projects that were just done in ME 113, and not done in this class.
So in a little bit more detail, here's the kinds of things those people working on a project will be doing. It's basically this whole experience and process of getting a project, forming a team, working together as a team, and talking to people with disabilities to really understand from their point of view, you know, what they need.
There's all too many courses that I've seen and all too many projects that I've seen that people work on a device that they think would be beneficial to people with disabilities, but inevitably that turns out not to be the case. There's a lot of, they may come up with a good engineering solution, but it's not a good human solution. So in order to make it worthwhile for a person with a disability, you have to, it's an absolute necessity to incorporate their ideas and their feedback into what you're doing. And depending on the complexity of your project, you'll be able to build a functional prototype and actually test it with the user, get feedback, and maybe do some improvement throughout the quarter. And the report and the presentation are the culmination of your efforts this quarter. So the assignments are actually pretty simple. There's a midterm report and presentation, and there's a final report and presentation. And the final thing is maybe something different. Oh, there's Angelo. There's a reflection, a personal reflection, and this is a good time to bring this up because part of your reflection is how you feel about things. So it's things like, why did you decide to take the class? What are your expectations? What are your fears? What are your challenges? What do you hope to get out of the class? And it would be good for people working on a project to actually have a diary of, so you can enter those things, because you know your feelings and emotions will change over time. And at the end of the quarter, everybody will individually submit their personal reflections on the class and working with people with disabilities and the whole range of things. So it'd be good to start that now, because this is the base point. I mean, you're here for a reason, and I like to, and putting that down on paper really brings to mind how much effort you've done to it, and it sort of takes you out of the engineering format into a more personal
reflective format. Grading for those working on a project. Here's the grading.
And what's wrong with this slide?
110%.
Angelo got it. It adds up to 110, and basically I'm giving you 110 chances to get 100%.
So the participation is the added 10%,
and that includes is your interaction and communication in engaging in discussion, asking questions of the presenters, and reporting back on your team's progress every week. So
I'll be I know who's talking, and I got
everybody's pictures,
so I know who you are. So I'm sure everybody would do good.
And so if you carry on into the spring, you'll basically have another chance, another 10 weeks to iterate on what you're doing, and depending on if you're in mechanical engineering and or in computer science, you typically go through these series of tasks.
So actually, the CS194 is the computer science equivalent of ME113, and by agreement, any student who is a computer science student who's working on a project can get credit in their senior as working on an assistive technology project in the spring gets them credited in CS194.
So a little bit more about the lectures, and there's a whole series of lectures.
I should mention that the syllabus for the class is online, and there's an extensive website, and I encourage everybody to check it out if they haven't done so already. So here's basically the lineup.
And it's all over the place. We have people talking about design thinking, ideation, universal design, design challenges, motion sensing devices. We have Mike Norrell is going to be talking to us about prosthetics and orthotics. And we're going to be having going over the VA spinal cord injury from and hearing from Dr. Graham Creasy, who is the chief of spinal cord injury over there. We'll be talking to him, seeing some devices that help out these folks. And so that'll be pretty interesting. We did that last year, and it was really good. We have an occupational therapist, and she's going to be bringing in some of her students. So we'll get a personal perspective on people with disabilities. We're going to try something new this year. We're going to try an online lecture. My colleague up in Spokane invented this device called Linkgraphica. It's a communication system for persons with disabilities, so we're going to have a little webinar. Hopefully that'll work. We're going to be trying it out next week. We're also going to have another tour of the GATE Lab over at Children's Hospital at Stanford. Dr. Rose will be hosting that. We're going to have a couple out-of-town visitors. Peter Axelson is a colleague of mine and a Stanford grad who lives in Nevada now. And so he's going to be flying his adapted plane into Palo Alto Airport and giving a talk. And I know it's going to be great. And to get into some other sort of esoteric areas, we're going to have a fellow talk about virtual reality. We're going to also have a talk from a fellow from SRI on robotics. We're also going to have somebody locally from Stanford talk about web accessibility. And Terry Adams from the Office of Disabled Student Services always gives a nice presentation on her perspectives from a person with a disability. So any questions so far? Come on in. No questions? I was so clear that there's no questions. Okay. So let's get into assistive technology. And so these are some of the things I'll be talking about the remainder of the lecture.
So in every field, there's a whole set of buzzwords, and you have to know about what they are in order to speak intelligibly about them. So these are some of the words that we're going to be talking about. So what is disability? We hear a lot about disability, but what is it? As it turns out, it's a pretty hard concept to define, and it basically depends on who's defining it and why they need to define it, that the definition comes into play. So if you're talking about workman's compensation type of things, you're talking about people with disabilities, you're talking about, are they able to, get back to work? So it's a work, sort of a work-based definition. And so it's a health problem or condition that prevents them from working. Well, that isn't all to life as we know it.
Other people like the VA has actually a different way of representing disability. They actually have a thing called percentage disabled. I
haven't been able to find this out, but if you get 25% disability or 50% disability or 100% disability, and they determine that based upon your health condition, and they pay you disability benefits. And who watched 60 Minutes and knows what the veterans disability benefits payments are per year? $30 billion. That's how much disabled veterans get for their disabilities.
A more appropriate definition may be one that looks at activities, because you know everybody has wants to do things, but if you're disabled, maybe you're prevented from doing things like that. So there's an activity-based definition that takes into account things like, you know, housework and household needs and other activities like that.
But you know, I have my own definition.
And I've been thinking about this for quite a bit. And so my definition is based on opportunity. And in everybody's life, I think there's a set of opportunities that present themselves.
And so you basically want to take advantage of these opportunities. But if you're a person with a disability, you may not be able to take advantage of opportunities when they come around.
So my definition is a health condition that prevents an individual from taking full advantage of life's opportunities, and that includes, you know, everything, including education and daily living and, you know, moving around and all the stuff that we enjoy doing. So that's my inclusive definition. Oops, sorry. See this map here? It's not a Verizon coverage map. It's a map of people with disabilities. And you can see they're everywhere. Every state has people with disabilities. And every year I update this number. So in the U.S., it's like 55 million. And in some cases, I've heard a lot more than that. And a lot of people are severely disabled, and children are disabled. And this is a new thing I've added this year. Fully one quarter of all the health care costs relate somewhat to disability. So that's a huge number. So this is not an insignificant thing from a personal point of view or a societal point of view. It's a big deal. Disability is the largest minority group. If you're older, you have a much higher chance of being disabled, having an impairment. Of course, there's people with vision impairments, hearing impairments. There's over 1 million wheelchair users. There's people that are mentally retarded. And there are people that... a few people that are born with their disability, but most of them are acquired, you know, during life. Disability rates vary by age, sex, race, and ethnicity, and there's some very good studies that you can go and see all these charts and get things down to, you know, by county type of numbers. Disabilities, this is a huge thing here. Disabilities result in a reduced chance of employment. And if you can't get employed, you can't, you know, make it on your own. So that's a huge deal there. And, of course, if you can't get work, then you're going to not have the income of an able-bodied person. So this is these are big things to know. And as everybody ages and everybody is going in that direction, right, and there's been a study about this, that the risk of disability, you know, goes up, and that's been confirmed, you know, with age. So, all sorts of disability types. You know, if you can be born with a disability, or you can be an acquired disability due to disease or injury. the disability may be sensory, you know, so something with your senses, your eyes, your hearing or seeing. It could be functional, that you're unable to walk because of a disability or amputation or whatever. And there's a whole another set of mental disabilities and psychological problems that result in disabilities as well. And as you can see from this picture, you know, anybody can be disabled, you know. Cartoon characters can be disabled. Student cartoon characters can be disabled. People in Second Life can be disabled. Even a president can be disabled. So it can happen to everybody. But there's one group of individuals who are so impaired that they spend 12 to 25 years in institutions before they can contribute significantly to society. They're an extreme burden on their families, and they have no job prospects. And so who are these people?
Well, they're students.
So everybody is disabled. So if you're a person with a disability, you know, what are your needs and desires? Well, you know, basically if you're somebody who's sick, you want to get better. You want to be well. You want to regain
wellness, your health, and want to regain as much function as you can. You want to be able to do things for yourself independently. You don't want to have somebody else do things for you. And again, I put in here, you want to take full advantage of all the opportunities that come to you. I mean, everybody here has had an opportunity to go to Stanford. What if you didn't have that opportunity? What if your opportunity was to go to Berkeley instead? Oh, how terrible would that be? And, you know, basically it comes down to, you know, being able to pursue your own happiness and integrate into, you know, what other people are doing to feel a part of society. So that's what the people want to do. In the U.S., perceptions of people with disabilities, I mean, we see people with disabilities all the time. We see them at Stanford. We see them on the street. We see them in our community. They're integrated among us. That's called mainstreaming. There's the Americans with Disabilities Act that, you know, promotes that kind of integration. In other countries, the situation may be different. In other countries, people with disabilities sometimes are taken care of, but most of the time, in the poorer countries, they're hidden away. They may never see the light of day. They're locked in the house someplace. The parents feel embarrassed by them, so they're locked away. They don't have a chance to take advantage of life at all. In countries like Japan, they really like their technology, so the Japanese really like building all sorts of gadgets that help people with disabilities. Whether they're useful or not is another issue, but all sorts of neat things coming out of Japan. Okay, let's talk a little bit about how to refer to people with disabilities, and this is something that I've been exposed to for quite a while because I've been working in the field. And so the main thing in political correctness is to put the person rather than the condition first. So you talk about people with a disability, so you put the people first, so you don't talk about the disabled. And you focus on people's capabilities, you know, that the person is a wheelchair user. What he's capable of doing, you put up front rather than what they're incapable of doing. And so you refer to the person rather than the disability group, so you need to be inclusive. And I have a slide that sort of represents this. And we hear these terms all the time, the elderly, the deaf, the blind, the brain injured, you know, all these things. And when you say that, it really, you know, excludes them from the general population. So in order to get away from that, to be inclusive, is you say, you know, people who are blind, people who smoke, senior citizens, and things like that. And that makes a lot more sense and really is an inclusive type of statement. So there's all these shorthand descriptors, like para and quad, and you know, medical people use these all the time, and then there's things that are more derogatory, but it actually depends on, you know, who's saying it. You know, if you're in some group, you know, if you're in the geek squad, you know, then being a geek is okay, and you can refer to yourself in any derogatory sense without, you know, fear of you know, somebody, you know, smashing you. But but if you're referring to somebody outside of your group, you better be very careful because, you know, they'll get insulted. So actually, people who are wheelchair users, they'll refer to themselves as gimps. So, you know, it's okay, you know, if they're referring to themselves like that. But you, as an able-bodied person, you know, saying that about somebody would not be right. So other terms, let's define them. A patient is a person who is undergoing care. Could be in a hospital. It could be as an outpatient. A user who is somebody who is using a particular device. A subject is somebody who is doing that people are doing research on. A research subject is the nomenclature. A consumer is somebody who buys things. Okay. So these are all terms that should be used correctly in referring to, you know, people with disabilities. Things that aren't, in my mind, the most appropriate terms are things like when you hear somebody suffering from a disease,
or afflicted with,
confined to a wheelchair, or a victim of stroke or something like that. And you still see that every day in newspapers and stuff like that.
But those aren't really the right terms. Alternately, you should use things like, you know, diagnosed with diabetes, you know, living with cancer, survivor of
whatever, of a disease. So that's a better way, a more positive way of referring to
that. So here's my colleague, Robert Van Enten. So how should we refer to him if we were to put a label on him? How should we refer to him? Oh, he's Bob.
That's his name. He's a rehab engineer from
Florida, and that's who he is. He's Bob. I've known him for years and years, and he's a
great guy.
But actually, he was the president of the Little People of America,
which is an organization.
So, but you know, you should look at
the person first and the disability second.
How did this get in there? Okay, assistive technology. So again, this is sort of my definition. You know, when you talk about technology, you think about a device, but I think it's more than a device. It's a device and the process that makes these devices available.
So it's the whole thing about designing things and selling them and servicing them and making them available to people with disabilities. So assistive technology, a device is one that has some type of diagnostic, functional, adaptive, or rehab benefit. So what does diagnostic mean? Well, you know, maybe the device is something that will characterize a person's, you know, muscle strength or something. So it's not something that is particularly useful for the person with a disability, but it's something that is useful for the person who cares for that individual to know how much strength they have and know if their therapy is working. So that's what I call diagnostic. A functional device is something that returns function, like walking, to an individual. And an example of that may be a prosthetic device. An adaptive device is something that a person uses to make a bridge from their disability into to communicate better or be able to be mobile. So there's a number of devices called communication devices that are computer-based that can be considered adaptive devices. And rehab devices is one that a person with a disability would use and through a rehab therapy, you know, be able to get their function restored somewhat. So an engineer's employ and a process to specify the design, the development, testing, and bringing these devices to market. So that's some of the stuff that we're going to do. So assistive technology is not just for engineers, but there's a lot of other people working on it, and includes, you know, medical people and therapists and people who supply the things, the manufacturers, people who make policies, and educators, and as well as engineers. So lots of people involved in assistive technology. So In summary, assistive technology devices, you know, what they provide: greater independence, increased opportunities for participation, and improved quality of life for people with disabilities by enabling them to perform tasks that they were unable to accomplish before or had great difficulty doing, and through a different method of interacting with the world around them. For example, instead of walking, you use a wheelchair, and you get that mobility equivalent. That's what I mean by that. And I think that's my hand over here. So there's lots of new assistive technology coming on the market, and I sort of watch the literature for these things, and typically, you know, every day I see like two articles about two devices that are new or research or some findings and stuff. And they include everything from, you know, computer devices, robotics, and nanotechnology and other medical technologies and, you know, prosthetic devices and all sorts of stuff like that. So lots of people working on it. So rehabilitation from the medical model is just the restoration of function, you know, through basic medical things like surgery and medication therapy, retraining.
But a more inclusive model includes the assistive technology, the devices, and the process that provides rehab devices. So the goal of rehab is to restore function, but the inclusive goals of assistive technology include increased independence and improved quality of life for people with disabilities. And rehab engineering is a discipline, profession that that people like myself have engaged in to work in one or more of these activities: device design, research and development, transfer, marketing, provision, training, and education. So I fall into a couple of those categories. So there's a professional organization called RESNA, Rehab Engineering Society of North America, and they have these special interest groups, and here's a list of them. And so you can see sort of the breadth of the rehab engineering field. They're talking about mobility and transportation, communication, eating, assessing devices, transferring devices from the lab into commercialization, sensory stuff, wheelchairs and seating, electrical stimulation for strengthening muscles, all sorts of computer applications. There's applications for farmers with disabilities, because farmers, get disabled because the machines they use are very dangerous. So there's people working on that. There's a whole field called service and assistive robotics. Job accommodation is a process of getting is trying to come up with an individualized solution for a person in a work environment. Lots of people working on this. Aging is another issue, and international appropriate technology. What works for us in this country, in a developed country, may not work for a poor country. So our solution would not work for them. And having a powered wheelchair in an area where there's no roads or sidewalks and stuff may be pretty difficult. Universal access is another issue, and that goes sort of hand in hand with universal design. So I'm going to talk a little bit about market, because it's sort of important. So there's lots of people in the world with a disability, so you might think, if you have this big market of people that boy, you'd be able to make a lot of money. There's a lot of people with disabilities. I'll make something and sell it. But the truth is that every person with a disability has different needs. You can have two people who have the same degree of blindness and have different needs depending on what their family situation is, or job situation, how they feel about themselves, and so on. The biggest group of people with disability are wheelchair users, and there's probably, a million of those in the U.S. But here's the dirty, dirty secret. Because the market isn't well defined, that any company that wants to sell devices into the market is going to be a small company, and the devices are going to be expensive. That's it. That's the truth. I mean, there's lots of examples of this. You've seen the iBot wheelchair that was sold for a number of years for $25,000. They lost money on every one. They spent $500 million developing that, and didn't make it. So let's talk about some assistive technology devices that I worked on at the VA. This is actually one that got started as a Stanford student project back in 1979. Would you believe that? It's a head control for a powered wheelchair that used these Polaroid ultrasonic sensors that were found on cameras. And I think we were the first ones to break apart the cameras and use that technology to make it work. So to go over here. So this is back in the days when things were pixelated, and this is before I started dyeing my hair gray. So the sensors monitor my head position, and so my head is basically a wireless joystick, and it's controlling the wheelchair. So all I got to do is tilt my head off the vertical, and I can go backwards and forwards and stuff like that. And so man, I tried, you know, for like 10 years, you know, giving away the plans and stuff for this to get somebody to be interested in it. And even though through all that, I you know, it hasn't made it on the market. So even the best engineering device, that, you know, is there's no guarantee you're going to get on the market.
This is a a mechanical hand that does fingerspelling. And fingerspelling is a subset of sign language that the deaf use. But for people who are deaf and blind, they use a tactile, their tactile sense to feel the interpreter who is making these gestures, you know, one for each letter of the alphabet into the hand of the person who is deaf and blind. And they interpret the gestures as letters of a message. So I used a bunch of servo motors in there and a little embedded processor to do that. And actually, it went pretty fast. And so the person who was deaf and blind would feel the hand either from the front or the back and interpret those letters. I think it's doing the alphabet now. W, X, Y, Z. So that was pretty neat. I worked on this virtual reality project, and the idea here is that for people who have had a stroke, their walking is affected sometimes, and so what you want to do is to improve their walking. And so we had this little device that consisted of a computer and a camera, and you're looking at the view of the camera, and the person is walking and wearing a head-mounted display, and they're walking on a treadmill, so they're seeing themselves walk from the side, which is sort of a new type of perspective, and they're walking and they're given instruction to step over this virtual obstacle that the computer creates. And so you can actually see the person miss it there, they got it there, they're able to step over it. The computer's able to figure out whether they've hit it or missed. We'll record that and generate a sound and generate vibration on the heel of the toe of the shoe that hit the obstacle. And of course, if you hit a virtual obstacle, you don't trip. So it was pretty interesting, and work is continuing on this at Northwestern University. Also worked on this really neat project, a driving simulator at the VA. So this is there's a bunch of there's like four computers here. There's monitors that give you the virtual roadway, and this is a cab, and so it's really neat because you can generate your own course, and we had people who have had a stroke or brain injury drive it in an effort to assess their ability to drive after they've had their brain injury, because the way they've been assessing people's driving ability is put them in a car. Have them drive around the VA. And, of course, a person with brain injury says, oh, yeah, that's going to be a piece of cake. But it turns out it's not a piece of cake, that the people's injuries are really severe, and you need to have a safe way of assessing people and also of training them. Maybe with a little bit of training on the system, they're able to get back the ability to drive. And the VA does actually have a whole program of driving rehab, and we're going to have a speaker talk about that. And he's going to come by with some adapted vehicles, so that'll be really neat. This is not a device I worked at the VA, but this is a commercial device called the Mindset. It's a brain-computer interface, and there's actually an electrode here, and there's another electrode on the ear. And this actually measures surface EEGs, so it can pick up your mental state. And they actually have a way for it to control computer games, and they have open software. They're going to be here on Thursday, and this is one of the projects that students can choose to work on. They're going to be donating equipment to us and give us the challenge to come up with a device that will help people with disabilities using this device. It's commercially available. It's $200, which is really inexpensive. So that's going to be one of the projects that people can work on.
Here's another project by this local company startup called Wool Garage. And it's a two-armed robot that has a really nice vision system and Ethernet connectivity. And they've, if you go onto their website, you'll see a lot of videos of them, plugging in the wall plug and doing things with a dishwasher and stuff like that. It can be controlled autonomously or by a remote control. And this is another project that students can work on. The idea here is to come up with an application for this robot that would help people with disabilities, including people who are elderly. So that's going to be great. They're building 25 of these, and they're going to make it available to the class. And you'll hear more about that on Thursday. There's been a huge improvement in prosthetics and orthotics last few years, and unfortunately it's due to war injuries and stuff. But there's devices on the market now that have computers in them, and they're intelligent, and they're really remarkable in the way that they work. And for the first time, if you're a soldier and you're injured and you have your leg blown off and you have a prosthetic leg, you can go back and join your unit and fight again. So, I mean, that's how good prosthetics are. So you can do that. And before you weren't able to do that. So, I mean, so you're able to rejoin your company and continue fighting. That's great. There's a lot of work in hand prosthetics, and this is a commercially available prosthetic hand, fully formed and looks like a human hand. And uses a myoelectric electric signal. This is a skin-based signal to open and close the fingers. And they just came out with a new design, which individual prosthetic fingers. So there's a, for people who have just lost one or more fingers, you can add in an individual prosthetic finger, which is not sure they've ever had that before. And this is a motor-powered one. For children, there's devices on the market now, and I noticed a second iteration of development on this device. So they've taken this chair, powered wheelchair, and had this robot on it, which has a bunch of these ultrasonic sensors, and so it prevents a child from bumping into things, but still being able to explore their own mobility. This is a device that's in the general category of what I call exoskeletons. These are devices that sit outside the body and provide some mechanical advantage for people with disabilities. And this company is local in Moffett Field. And there's a whole mess of other types of devices that are for upper body and for lower body that sort of do the same thing. Especially Honda's worked on devices like this as well, exoskeletons. I bought wheelchairs, one I mentioned, and I saw an earlier version of this. This was the precursor to the Segway, and this is really neat. It's gyroscopically stabilized. It has the ability to balance on two wheels, which is remarkable. It has the ability to go upstairs. It also has the ability, despite being a good engineering design, had the ability to be a failure in the market because it was so expensive. This is a robot trainer that you wear. So you put on these straps and stuff, and this robot walks for you. And so the reason that that's important is because they've realized that, the walking process, even if it's artificially done, is recorded in your system, and so it improves the ability to walk, so it provides walking therapy just by repetition. And we'll see this at the VA. I have one there. This is a brand new product that I've seen on the market. It's an Intel reader, and basically it's a camera system. You point it at lettering, and it will take a picture, and we'll do the OCR and read back what it sees. So what's really interesting is that it's a commercial device. It's $1,500, only weighs a pound, and it's useful by people who are vision impaired or who are blind as well. So there's a lot of work in coming up with the ergonomics of it and stuff like that. But, you know, it's not really much more than a netbook, so why is it so expensive? You tell me. Okay, so what are the top 10 rehab devices? So this was a question posed by our group, and if somebody can identify who Irene Ryan was, they get an extra point. So the first one was this device, in no order, an adaptive firmware card. So this went into an Apple II, who remembers Apple II? And this is a device that basically provided an alternative keyboard. So what it really did is provided a way for people with disability to use switches and scanning and stuff to use an Apple II computer. And so this was really key because before that time, it was unclear if people with disabilities would be able to use computers. And this showed that it could be. So there is a single switch you can use. There's a couple switches and stuff like that to generate input from it. Ultralight wheelchairs were a real advancement because before you had ultralight wheelchairs, you had devices, that chrome, tubular chrome, hospital-looking devices that didn't work very well. But having somebody who had an eye for design as well as engineering came up with a thing that looked a whole lot better. Came in different colors because people who use wheelchairs, they wear their wheelchairs every day. Am I right? So another engineering advance was just the use of good bearings. Without good bearings, the wheelchair doesn't roll very far. It takes a lot of energy to operate it. But if you have good bearings, it
makes it a lot easier.
And now wheelchair racers are faster than able-bodied racers. Portable communication systems. These are basically large touch-sensitive areas that somebody can use if they don't have, if they can't use a keyboard because of their lack of dexterity. But another thing beyond this is that it had voice output. So a person could hit letters on the screen and basically what they typed in would be enunciated by a speech synthesizer. So this was really big stuff back in the early 80s. Speech recognition software was a real big advance too, because if you didn't have the ability to use your hands, how are you going to use your computer? And I remember using this, on a device, PC. The software cost $6,000, and it barely worked, but it did work. But it was an advance. And another advance was making it cheaper, and so making it a commodity item. And now you can buy these recognition software for, not that much money. So it's a commercial type thing. Really neat things that I saw was an eye gaze controller. So basically, there's a camera down here that looks at where your eyes are looking at when you're looking at the screen, and will basically allow your eyes to do the typing. So that was neat, but. It was very expensive, $60,000, because they were handmade. And so how many people do you think bought them? Not very many. Morse code input. This is another way of getting information into a computer. There's one fellow that I know who was over at the Menlo Park VA, and he had brainstem stroke, so he basically was able to move his thumb like a quarter of an inch. And so we made a little switch for him that he was able to operate that switch and type Morse code into his computer and be online and talk to his wife and everybody around the world. And his handle was Cyber Thumb. So even with that little bit of motion and a little bit of assistive technology, you can be on the air. There are these custom-made systems that provide a way for non-vocal individuals to find a voice. And so typically these things have dynamic displays, which means that you type one letter or one picture and it cycles through a bunch of other pictures so that you don't have to do a lot of typing.
But it all sort of fell apart with the advent of graphical user interface, because that made it a lot harder to figure out what was on the screen and where to look on the screen. Whereas before, it was all text. You can read the text from top to bottom. But if you have a graphical user interface with windows and graphic elements and stuff in there, you know, how do you know if you're blind people? How do you access that? It's a real problem, but there's some solutions. Whoa. So let's quickly go through some projects we're done here at Stanford, back from 2006, a device for to help with urinating for this individual with cerebral palsy. This is a device that Drew remembers. It's a wheelchair lift that uses both that can lift both the wheelchair and therapist to the height of the exercise mat or a bed or his wheelchair.
Is that still around?
It's still around. Paige Turner was a really neat project that was done 5 years ago now. And so they took a basic stamp and they had actually made a mechanism that would be able to turn the pages of a book with just a flick of a switch. And it was very impressive.
And they had all the... They wanted to carry it on, but
typically these things, you know, sort of die after you know, people leave and graduate and stuff. Angela was involved in this project last year, but it started out as a project 2 years ago with the VA, a motorized device to help a person don an artificial leg. And they worked on it again last year, and there's the team and their improved device. And we'll talk to Angela a little bit about the effort that he made last year. And here's my folks from the second slide. These are a team that worked on this project, and they entered this design competition and were one of the finalists a couple years ago. And so this is a device that provided motivation for kids to walk on their, you know, more correctly. And it was done at the Stanford Gate Lab. This was a device that Angela also was participated in 3 years ago for him to be able to press the elevator buttons without having to manipulate the chair. So the idea was that you used a laser pointer to position this device, and it had an antenna that extended out and that pressed the button. Well, they only got to this paper stage and they didn't actually fabricate a device. Last year, a team worked on a very challenging project to explore ways to open doors for people in wheelchairs, and they had several different concepts that were workable, but it still needs a little bit more effort. But you know, it was a good attempt. One team used a Wii remote as a receptor to provide motivation for exercise, so their exercise motion turned into actually musical notes, and it was pretty interesting, musical sounds, not just notes, not just tones, but more musical. It's really neat. Handicart was a project that looked at attaching a shopping cart to a wheelchair, and they came up with a solution that was was removable, and that worked out pretty nice for them. And this was a software-only project that Isaac did, a dialer for the iPhone. He wrote an app that allowed a person with no vision to use the keyboard to dial a phone without having to look at it. And that's pretty neat. And in ME113 last year, there was a student group that did a second shot at building a steerable surfboard for this quadriplegic individual surfer down in Southern California. And they got out the day of the presentation, they took it on the bay, and they tested their device, and it worked. And so that was really neat. So they had a joystick up here that operated a custom rudder device, so that the surfer can be pushed toward a wave, and the surfer himself can make the U-turn to catch the wave. So that was really neat. So I think with that, I'm going to basically stop here, and I'm going to hand out a couple things. One of them is the list of projects for folks to consider, and there's a lot of projects, and unfortunately there's not a whole lot of people going to be working on projects, but we'll talk about that later. So please look that over and think about forming a team and think about projects that you might want to work on. I should mention that there's a couple of people that are my colleagues that will help you. Debbie is a therapist. You'll see her tomorrow and next Tuesday. And Doug, you'll see later on in the semester. He's a mechanical engineer extraordinaire. So we don't have any ordinary people here. We have extraordinary people in here. And please visit the website, and here are our contact information. And this will be, this PowerPoint will be on the web, so if you missed something, and the audio will be on the web as well, so you can review that as well. And if you have colleagues back in the dorm that you think they may be interested in the class, please tell them about it, because we have empty seats here, we have lots of projects, and this is going to be exciting. So, any questions? Wow. Got to have questions. Come on, I did all the talking. Mike.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that's been made for a difficult ability person that you can actually put a monitor up where if they moved a finger, it would be like an arm moving back and forth. If they moved a toe, it would be like a leg, and they could actually run.
Yeah. Yeah, you're talking about avatars, and yeah, there's been a lot of work in that, and there's actually, we have our speaker on virtual reality. He's going to be talking about some of his work in that area as well.
I guess the other question would be, can you actually generate higher heart rate by having these people see themselves actually think they're running?
Right. Oh, that's an interesting question. Well, you know, there's this whole concept of biofeedback that's used a lot. And there's certainly the concept of walking through virtual environments and stuff like that. So maybe those two things could be incorporated. Okay. Any other questions, comments? What are your thoughts? Find it interesting?
I mean, this class is a little bit like off to the side, but.
You know, all the students who have, you know, taken this class and have worked on projects, you know, get a lot of enthusiasm out of it, a lot of benefit out of them and out of it, and really glad that they participated. So, in my mind, you know, I think everybody has a latent need to see what they can do with their talents,
and helping people with disabilities is certainly a challenge that I'm sure Stanford students can undertake. And there's a whole concept called public service, which is involving people from the community in classes, and that's what we're basically engaged in here. So a lot of the concepts like individual reflection are based upon these public service. Yes.
Yeah, you can get together right now, and maybe you can say, you know, that you'll be over there, and people can look for you.
As of now, there was only like four people who signed up to work on projects. So, with that few, maybe we'll just do two projects of two, and maybe there'll be more people who decide to switch from lecture only. But there's a couple projects that are actually going to be funded. So I like to sort of rate those as high priority for you to work on. And so we'll talk about more about that on Thursday. Okay. Somebody else? I know it's late in the day, but all these lectures are really inspiring people. I mean, intellectually inspiring. So I've very lucky that I know these people and that they're in the area and they're willing to come here and speak, and so you're going to be the benefits of all that. For example, Ralph Hotchkiss is a fellow that's won MacArthur Foundation Genius Award. He'll be here later on. And Peter Esselstyn is an engineer in a wheelchair and who's been working in the field for many, many years. And so I hope you find these concepts and people and topics as interesting as I do. Okay. John?
He's the guy that invented the first stair climber wheelchair.
You can ask him about that. I'm not sure that's true, but I remember him from years and years ago, and he was telling me about, Dave, I wish there was a program that I can do on my computer that would substitute for my drafting board. And I looked at him, and I had no idea what he was referring to. And then he was one of the first users of AutoCAD when it came out. So, I mean, he's that far ahead. But he's also that far behind because he's doing a lot of really interesting work with wheelchair construction in developing countries. So he'll be talking about that. Anything else? What's your feeling? What are you feeling right now? Feeling tired at the end of the day? Feeling inspired? Feeling
hungry.
Feeling good?
Hungry, thirsty.
Oh. Okay, well, I think we've had enough for today. If anybody wants to talk to me, I'll be up here for a while. And feel free to mingle among yourselves. And I hope... Thanks for reminding. Thank you. Bye.